Bickley and Murata. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
All right, Cardinals camp in full swing now. We're a couple days into it, and already, I don't want to say injuries mounting because it's not that, but no J.J. Watt, obviously, right now with the hamstring soreness. No DeAndre Hopkins today, sat out practice with what Cliff Kingsbury called a minor thing, and now the Cardinals have to deal with the COVID protocol because they have Rodney Hudson, Justin Pugh, Andy Isabella, and Keyshawn Johnson all in COVID protocol as of about an hour and a half ago. So, you know, we got Lorenzo Alexander here. So, I mean, you're going to, as a team, you've got so many guys in camp. You know that yeah. The guys are, not everybody's going to be practicing every day. What's your, I don't want to say concern level, but just like your thoughts on this Cardinals team that has the core that was there last year, but does have quite a few new pieces that they're leaning on, whether it's J.J. Watt or some of those receivers like A.J. Green.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
Guys that are proven but haven't done it here. And then you're counting on Zaven Collins, it sounds like, too.
Yeah, that's something that you have to really encounter every single season. I mean, there's not too many teams. Obviously, Tampa Bay, I think, is an outlier when you get all 22 starters back, which is really unheard of,
yeah.
Right? So it's something that you really have to endure every single year because of free agency. Guys are always leaving and coming. You know, maybe they're a little bit older. Maybe they're just getting their first big deal. And so you learn to cope with it as a player because it's rarely that you're playing with a guy for, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years just because of how fluid the rosters are. And so I think guys come accustomed to it. As a professional, you adapt and learn how to fit into the system because the biggest thing is just a learning curve. And so if you have minimal players, right? So since it's just, you know, it's more than just J.J. Watt, but let's say it's just J.J. Watt being inserted. You got Malcolm Butler being inserted. Those guys, because they're professional, the learning curve is a little bit easier to bring them on. You just have to teach them the new language.
Yeah.
Versus a guy like Zaven Collins or even Isaiah Simmons who have to learn how to be a pro, learn this system that may be a little bit more complicated than what they've seen in college. And so that learning curve is a little bit harder. But those are things that you incur every single year. And as coaches, you want to develop a plan for each of those guys, right? So Zaven is a little bit more maybe a slower pace. The same thing with Isaiah, where you can't give him too much. But with J.J., give him everything because he's seen everything already. All he has to do is just learn the new terminology and fit right in. And so it's part of on the player, especially if you have the experience. And then it's also on the coaches to create a culture conducive to kind of bring you in and help everybody kind of mold together. So when you have week one come about, everybody's ready to hit on all cylinders.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, that's because especially in this division, you can't have, we've seen with the Cardinals the last couple of years where it's like, oh, week one, we're still kind of working some stuff out. Like, well, I'm sure the other team is too, but if they're catching you for a win or a tie like 2 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, and so you're not your finished product week one, you want to be ready and have like your nuts and bolts down, like the base of, you know, so let's say 70-80% of what you want to do.
Yeah.
You better have that down locked and loaded to go. And then, you know, third down stuff, you may be limited it because you have some young players, especially at that linebacker position. So maybe you can't do some wrinkles that you could maybe do towards the end of the season once they get more confident as far as playing linebacker, making those weekly adjustments or even in-game adjustments and when you move forward.
So let's talk about those linebackers with Zaven Collins and Isaiah Simmons. First of all, with Simmons, are you essentially treating him like a rookie in some ways just because he didn't get to have a training camp last year? Or is that
No?
Okay, so he should be good to go.
Yeah. In this league, you don't got time to be a rookie much that very long. And oftentimes we would say after that third week of your first year,
yeah,
I'm going to still treat you like a rookie, but you better stop playing like a rookie.
That's
right?
The worst time.
Yeah.
That's the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, because I need you, but I'm going to still have you go get my lunch and my breakfast or, you know, go do some errands that I need you to do. But you need to show up and play and be a professional and play like you've been here for 10 years. So, and it's just the truth of the matter. You're a professional. You got drafted high. Obviously, he has all the athletic ability to do it. And so, again, it's all about cultivating that system where he can strive on his God-given talents until he really starts learning the position and how to play it on this level. And it takes a little bit of time. What we saw him last year do, struggled early, right? But he stayed with it, played some special teams, grew, got some confidence, and then towards the end of the year, start seeing him in some packages, being used in different ways. And so this year he needs to use all that experience from last year and hit the ground running and really help Zaven maybe not have some of the missteps that he had. Like, hey, bro, you got to take XYZ serious, or you may want to think about it like that. So he can actually be a sounding board for Zaven because he just went through it and really helped them. And then together they can grow and really be a dynamic duo because they complement each other very well. You know, Zaven being more of that bigger body thumper downhill, and Isaiah being the guy that can cover, run with guys. I almost see them, and it's a little different, almost like, and because I'm familiar with this team, obviously, Buffalo Bills with Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano, and how they complement each other with their skill set and what they're able to bring. And they have this a special dynamic here, and I think they may even be a little bit better with Isaiah's elite athleticism, kind of off the charts, can really do something special.
Kingsbury talked about them today. They asked him, you know, are those guys on a short leash in terms of maybe starting for this team right out of the gate in week one?
Best for the team, you know. Like I've said all along, those two guys will be out there and making plays, running sideline to sideline, and we expect them to play at a high level. But having Jordan Hicks, having Tanner Vallejo, if somebody gets nicked up, something happens, those are definitely great insurance plans.
And more along those lines, Zaven Collins specifically, what Kingsbury has seen from him.
He's made steady progress since he got here, whether it was rookie minicamp or these first 2 days. And he's going to get a ton of reps. He's got some great veterans in that linebacker room, too. When you talk about Jordan Hicks, Tanner Vallejo, guys that have been around and seen it and can really help him mature as a player.
So like, put yourself in the position where, like, let's say you're on the Cardinals. I know you don't want to come back, but I'm just saying, like, for the hypothetically, I'm sure in August.
They don't want me back either. I'm old.
I'm sure in August, guys that retire, you're like 15 years younger than Tom Brady. So most of the, when guys retire around August, they're like, yeah, I'm glad I'm not playing, right? But then September is a little bit tougher. But no, let's say you're on this team and you are, like, in your 10th year as a linebacker. What are you looking for from either the rookie or from Isaiah Simmons? Because like you said, he's a second-year player now. You are leaning on him. Are there certain elements you're looking at with their game when you're saying, okay, even if this isn't translating on Sundays yet, I see it in practice and I feel good about where this is going?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it comes up in meetings, just their comfort level and confidence in understanding the playbook and being confident in their calls. And so that's always the biggest thing, especially when – and I think Zaven had to do this a little bit more as far as speaking, but not Isaiah so much. When you're out on the field, are you communicating? Are you getting a close call out? Are you making adjustments? You may even be wrong, but are you at least telling me something so we're all on the same page? We used to have a saying, if we're all wrong, we're all right. Right? So you can be in the wrong check, but if we're all playing the same defense, we're good to go. But if you make the right check and somebody doesn't hear it, you messed up. So is he communicating well enough that everybody's on the same page at any given moment, whether he's right or wrong? And so those are the type of things that I want to see as an older guy. And I want to see Isaiah communicating with him. Is he helping him out? Is he talking? Is he echoing his call with confidence and getting guys lined up and orchestrating the defense so that then you can play downhill and play fast?
It's a great point that makes a lot of sense when you say it. I mean, it seems simple, but like, even if we're going to be in the wrong defense, let's all be in it together so we're not bumping into each other and just running all over the place.
Yeah, because then you're playing things appropriately, because you hate to be in, you know, the corner's in cover two and the safety's playing cover three and he thinks you're going to be over the top and it's, you know, somebody's scoring a touchdown.
Yeah.
And that's oftentimes what happens in the league. It's a bust. Like, everybody isn't on the same page. And it all starts with the linebackers. You know, it starts with the mic, it gets kicked to the wheel, and then echoes, you know, either to the line or back.
Well, you know, Luke, they say that two wrongs don't make a right, but three rights do make a left.
I'm glad you jumped in just for that one.
Yes, thank you for confusing me.
He will do that. Actually, he's done it a lot less today, but wait till the 1 o'clock hour when he just runs free. So, like, a guy like Jordan Hicks, who... you know, he sees them go out and use a first-round pick on Isaiah Simmons last year. Okay, fine. But then a first-round pick on Zaven Collins this year, and it's kind of like, oh, Hicks isn't going to be here. Well, he is here.
Yeah.
And based on what you're saying, he's not just here. He's probably pretty important because at that position, he's already seen it all and done it all. He's already got a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and that goes a long way in just their maturation process. He can sit back and be able to tell them certain things as far as how teams attack them, what to look out for, you know, how to play with your eyes and hands. And not just run around. That's what you get a lot of times with young linebackers. They're so anxious to make a play that they take themselves out of the play. And the more you study film, which Jordan can help them with, and understand where you need to be, you can start being efficient with your athleticism, right? And so once your eyes tell you to go, I'm going. It's not like you're just running with your head like a chicken with his head cut off when the play snaps and you end up using all this energy out, right? And that's really the maceration process a Jordan Hicks can help them with, is just giving them or helping them understand the game at a quicker rate that a coach may not be able to communicate because it's coming from a player.
Also, just to recap, too, at Cardinals practice today, we got a few players in COVID protocols for Arizona. It was Keyshawn Johnson, Andy Isabella, Rodney Hudson, and Justin Pugh. So Cliff Kingsbury did talk about just how that affects things logistically around camp.
Are they able to be in meetings, or is it virtual?
Virtual meetings for them. Yep, they'll tune into those. Just can't be there in person.
And he also decided to take a positive approach to the whole situation.
A glass half full guy, so I think you can look at it that way. But obviously, to have it happen now and be able to have some of those guys be cleared through most of the season would be a plus, particularly some of the veterans that you know are going to be ready to roll when we get to week one.
He also talked about the rising vaccination rate for the team. I believe they're over 90% now at this point. So here's Cliff Kingsbury on that.
Yeah, I talked about 2 days ago, I think, just we felt like it was heading the right direction. I think our organization has done a great job presenting information. The NFL has done a great job presenting these guys with necessary information so they can make sound decisions. And it's good to see that number has risen.
Why do you think that number has increased?
I think our guys have been thorough in their process. They're professional athletes. This is their bodies, and they want to collect all the information they can and make the best decision they can make for their careers, their families moving forward, and that's what they've done.
So you've got so many players on a football team when you open training camp.
Yeah.
I mean, guys are going to have different views on stuff, but you said this earlier, like just from a coach's perspective, all the politics and everything aside, like you just want to know you have players available. So this is
right.
Kingsbury, even I think it was Cliff's first year right before he even started, Patrick Peterson got suspended for 6 games. He's like new quarterback, like all this new stuff. And now he's dealing with this too, certainly.
Yeah. And there's so many things that are out of your control. And so you tend as a coach, you want to try to control as much as you can. And that's all, you know, especially when you think about this vaccine, and that's why you're trying to encourage guys to get it. Obviously, the NFL is almost twisting your arm to get it.
Yeah.
Because even from a business perspective, they are trying to control what they can control as well. Because, again, there's so many things that can go wrong when you think about having more vaccinated players, minimize the risk of having a potential outbreak. Therefore, you don't have to potentially push games, move games, which saves them money, or even worst case scenario, having to cancel one. And so that's where it comes from, even though as a player, it doesn't feel good. And so it's like, hey, let me just make my decision. And I think once guys understand, you know, both sides and whatever your reason for as far as getting vaccinated or not, you're willing to live with it because you've had the opportunity to think about it.
Yeah. And like you said earlier, too, with the younger guys, like if you're not out there, no matter what the reason is, you're just going to lose your job.
At that point, I mean, if I was a young guy in this league and I didn't want to get vaccinated, I would have got vaccinated because you're right at the crisp of potentially living out your dream. And this is keeping me, I could potentially be off the field and miss days.
Yeah.
Or a teammate think about not signing me. I mean, I would do it just because of those reasons. And that's just you hate that you have to live in a world like that, but that's kind of what obviously the nature of the beast is at this point.
That's not even somebody telling you have to do it. That's more, that almost just goes to the basic level of like, if you got a sprained ankle, but you're in your second year trying to make it, you kind of got to play through it.
Yeah, I'm not going to the, well, back in the day, I wouldn't go to the training room. I ain't telling nobody I'm hurt because that's the first ticket out of there.
Yeah.
And you're going out there and putting yourself through it. But I made that decision as a grown man, you know, even though it's a, you know, you hate to see it happen. I wouldn't want my kid to be in that situation.
Yeah.
I still made a conscious decision. The same thing with the vaccine. If you really are convicted not to do it, you wouldn't allow that to change your mind.
Yeah.
Right. So, and that's just what it comes down to. And you have to live with whatever decision you make.
Text us your thoughts on this and all of Cardinals training camp right now to the FanDuel text line at 620-620. I want to get back to the Phoenix Suns because Robert Sarver was on with Burns and Gambo yesterday and talked about a lot of things. He talked about Chris Paul's future with the team as much as he could. He We played the clips earlier. I'll play one of them here, too. But essentially, there's only so much he could say. They asked him if bringing Chris Paul back is the highest priority this offseason.
I think that'd be accurate, yeah.
Okay. To call it the highest priority to make sure he's brought back? Okay.
Yeah, but then, you know, he's an unrestricted free agent, and we're in the same boat as everybody else.
Right. Of course.
So, you know.
They asked him if Chris Paul has told him what he plans on doing.
I don't. Okay. I don't. But what I do know is that if you'd asked me when we made the trade whether I thought this would even be a decision, I would have said no.
Yeah.
And now it's, you know, I think he's got a decision to make. I mean, listen, he did what we thought he would do. You know, based on how he's played in the playoffs the last few years. And, you know, he was outstanding. And so, you know, are there other teams that would be interested and all that? Yeah, there probably is. So I'm not sure, to be honest with you. But I do think he really enjoyed being part of this team, and I know we loved having him on the team. So I hope he ends up back, I don't have control of that today.
Why is he answering the questions those ways? Just, I know you said earlier he's just being coy, that, you know, he might already have an agreement, he just can't say anything. But every one of those answers, and there's another one you're probably going to play, but every one of them is like...
past tense?
No, not even past tense, but like you're hedging your bets with every single one of them by saying like, well, you know, who knows what could happen? I'm sure a lot of teams are interested. I never thought this would happen, but he might be one of, you know what I mean?
That was disconcerting. We never thought this was possible, because I remember having this conversation on, I think it was this show, like 2 weeks into the season, and being like, you know, this probably won't happen, but it could. He could opt out at the end of his first year if he's as good as he was. And then obviously he even exceeded expectations.
Yeah, I think Saul Ross in an interview at some point also said that if you would have asked me at the beginning when we first got him, would this have been a decision for him? He would have said, like, no, I don't think he'd be coming back.
Yeah.
So I think success and building a relationship and all that thing changes your mind. But at the same time, you're always going to get coaches speak in of times of negotiations, of uncertainty, just because you don't want to paint yourself into a corner. That's what you're going to get. I've never got a straightforward answer, like, before we have to negotiate, even when I go to do my own day. Hey, so what do you think? Well, we love you, but we got to see what happens. Well, we love you, but, you know, you're getting a little bit old. So there's always this unclarity of where you really stand as far as what you really want to do. And that's just how people that negotiate or in that position have to speak, so you're not holding them to something that they say, you know, good or bad.
Yeah, but it's such a weird thing, and there's nothing, it can't change it. It's just the way the concept is, but yeah. It's like, okay, yeah, well, look, Zoe, you're great. We want to keep you. This is awesome. But we don't want to pay you that much, so maybe you're not as awesome as so-and-so.
This is how it works. That's just how the culture is, and he's aware of that when he's on the rake, because you're going to, we want it. Well, hold on, let me temper this a little bit. Yeah. It's just... this is how they're trained to talk to the media or give an answer. It's just it's habit. I even have to catch myself sometimes. Like, I don't play no more. I don't have an allegiance to anybody. I can kind of...
Yeah, you can say whatever you want now. That's the trade-off. That's the one good thing about being on this side instead of being on the field. You can say whatever you want. They also asked Robert Sarver, you know, because when they made the trade for Chris Paul, if you remember, there was a subsection of Suns fans that were like, eh. Partially because, you know, Chris Paul's been doing this for a while. A lot of it really was because Kelly Oubre was a fan favorite, and that feels like the craziest thing in the world to say now after you saw what Chris Paul did. But even those of us, and it was the majority that thought, okay, you got to make this trade, obviously, this is amazing. I don't know of anybody who thought they were going to the finals. So they asked Robert Sarver, did you think what happened this season was possible when you made that deal?
I mean, honestly, I would say no. You know, I wasn't thinking we were going to compete for an NBA championship, but I was thinking we'd take a big step forward. And then I thought we'd definitely be a playoff team, and I thought we could be very competitive. And then Monty said, you know, his aspirations for us to be a top four team in the West. And in my own mind, I said, you know, that's great, because it's a realistic goal, but it's aggressive. So that's kind of where my head was. But then, you know, we started winning a lot of basketball games, and, you know, of course my mind changed, and then you get rolling in the playoffs and, you know, have success with the teams we get. And the farther you go, you know, you can't help yourself. You just get greedier.
So the Monty Williams factor, I mean, that was a reason that Chris Paul chose this place in the first place.
Right.
And I give Chris Paul a ton of credit for looking at this roster and being like, no, they're going to be good. You know, like, I'm going to get in there right at the right time and take him to another level. But if he wanted to come here and play for Monty Williams 12 months ago or whatever, it wasn't even 12 months ago, and that worked, like, as a former player, that's important, right? The coaching is important. Like you said, money's already on the Suns' side, too, and they've got your coach.
I mean, it means a lot. I mean, that coach-player relationship, especially when you know what you're saying is being received and being implemented, right? And so they have that great work relationship. They obviously have a personal relationship as well. And so all that plays into your comfort level as a veteran in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so it's going to obviously be a positive in his mind. Obviously had a huge impact. And to me, I think it's even more so just the intangibles and how important they are. Oftentimes, you just worry about the talent. Now, what can CP3 do as a basketball player?
Yeah.
But just look at how he impacted this basketball team, and that's really why they were able to make that jump. We know what D-Book was going to do, but some of those other guys, the development, obviously we saw a little hint of it in the bubble, but that was only 8 games, and I think I remember doing the show with you, and like, I don't think they're going to go undefeated.
Yeah,
you know,
and then
what
they
I mean?
Did, and you were like, that still wasn't enough to get in. What's going on?
Right, yeah. So, but then bringing him in, obviously he did what he did, just his numbers and being up for MVP, but the intangibles of how he was able to impact the career paths, or, you know, supercharge them essentially, especially when you think about a guy like DA and make those guys better.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a cool thing. And so he's obviously going to do what he does there, but it's also cool to be able to be a part of somebody else's career in their maturation process. Then you have the Monty Williams aspect of it. So all of that, I think, really, in my mind, makes this like the ideal situation for him, because not only is he building on his legacy, he's also starting to help other guys develop and build theirs. And then, you know, when he's out of the league, he still has touch points, you know, just still in the league of men that he's really helped develop and the organization change.
Well, that's the thing. Even, I don't think Chris Paul's going to leave, but even at some point he's going to leave, even if it's two or three years down the line. DeAndre Ayton's better because Chris Paul was here. I bet if Devin Booker weren't in Tokyo right now, we could ask him. He would say, yeah, he's probably even a little bit better because Chris Paul was here, you know? And some of those other guys, Cam Johnson, some of these younger players, like, it just, it was one of those rare situations where, like, the trade was made and we talked about all the ways this could benefit the Suns, and it benefited in them in literally every way and then some, because they went all the way to the finals and almost won the whole thing. So there you go. We come back, we'll get back into the Aaron Rodgers discussion and just kind of go around the NFL as training camps get into full swing. That is next. Luke Lipinski and Lorenzo Alexander in for Bickley and Murata on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Welcome back to the show. Luke Lipinski, Lorenzo Alexander in for Bickley and Murata. And so we haven't done a show together in a while, so we haven't got to talk about Larry Fitzgerald and whether or not he's going to play.
No, we haven't.
No. And I don't really need to talk about it anymore, to be honest, until we have an answer. But Doug and Wolf had Kurt Warner on this morning, and I haven't heard the cut yet. I heard it in real time, but we're going to play it right here. Look, just to set it up, Kurt Warner's not like, oh, Fitz definitely is or isn't coming back. But they asked him, based on the way this has played out now, where camp has started and Fitz isn't on the team, but he's not on the team, this is how Kurt Warner perceived it.
You know what? I have no idea. I cannot believe that it's played out this long and we still don't know. You know, what I've kind of said along the way is that if it's played out this long, I kind of feel like he's going to come back. I mean, it just seems like an odd time to announce retirement now that training camps are starting and things are gearing up and football is coming back around. But I have no inside knowledge. I don't know what he's going to do, and I thought we would know by this point. But that's just kind of my gut, is that we've played this thing out and he hasn't made the decision to walk away, that I think he might come back and make another run at it.
Let's say he did come back, so, for the Cardinals, with the addition of A.J. Green and Rondale Moore and some of the other pieces they have, like, where would you put him? And then if you're Larry Fitzgerald, do you want to come back in a situation where you've been so great for so long that you're, you know, what, 15, 20% of the pie as a receiver?
Yeah, and that's always a hard transition, especially when you've been a great player and played the level that Fitz has done as such a long time. are you okay with, you know, coming back and having a reduced role? There's definitely a role for him to have. He's still very dependable and can make big time plays when you need it, especially when you think about, you know, some third and manageables. You think about red zone, you know, just some of the critical areas and downs. But would you be okay with having that reduced role and being targeted in those times? And that's something that he can obviously only answer. But I think there's always will be a role for a guy like that who can still use his football IQ, his big body, and then obviously his hands that, you know, is just Hall of Fame caliber hands, which we already know he's, you know, a Hall of Famer, and come in and still be productive. It just be, it'll be different, right? And so going from being a guy that, you know, used to, you know, probably average, what, like 90 catches and probably go for, you know, 1,500 yards to now go to, let's say, well, how many catches did he have last year? Like
54.
50, so yeah, to say it'd be probably cut again, and then you're more like a specialty guy, you know, red zone, third down.
Yeah.
That's a hard transition when you know you, especially you know you put the work in. I can do so much more because I'm used to doing.
Well, do you think he could do so much more? Do you think his lower production the last couple of years is because of him or because of the they haven't figured out how to use him correctly? Or
I think
combo?
It's probably a combination of everything. Obviously, he's not the guy he was when he was putting up those elite type numbers, but he can still get open. I think a lot of it, you know, the progression of Kyler growing and being able to go through all his progressions and find guys and be able to throw accurate from the pocket consistently. I think all those things play into it. You know, obviously Fitz probably has a tighter window now, but sometimes you have to throw the ball to give him an opportunity. So I think it's, you know, Kyler progressing, you know, obviously having Cliff, you know, dial up plays where maybe he is in that, you know, maybe not the number one, but two. And then obviously him being available and being healthy enough to go out there because he did miss his last game too.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of all those things getting better to where he could have, you know, 30 or 40 catches. It's never going to get back to what it was.
It's got to be tough, though, too, for a guy that played on a lot of teams that didn't make the playoffs to look at this team if he was leaning retirement, but he wasn't, like, sure, you know, and look and be like, this might actually be a playoff team. Like, do I want to take a reduced role on a playoff team after missing the playoffs so many times? That's, I can't tell if he's just like, I'm going to retire. I'm not going to make a big deal out of it. I'll never announce it. Or if he's really still on the fence.
Yeah, he may be still on the fence of the right opportunity, or maybe he wants to, you know, be on a contender that has a chance. I don't think this team is ready to win a championship.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for a guy who's never won one, it's probably important. You know, you want to be able to go out and say that you want our help to, you know, win a championship, whatever role that looks like.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you don't have to catch 90 balls to say you was a part of something, but be a part of that. And that was, and that's even hard, right? Because it's not guaranteed. You know, I always compare people, you know, what my situation, I had a chance to come back and play for the Bills last year, and I would have ended up one game away from it, you know. And so you can never guarantee that you're going to even have a shot. You can put yourself in the best situation, but it's not guaranteed just because so many things can go wrong. And so you're playing, all those things are going through your mind.
So when you're watching the Bills last year and they're going on that run, like, I know you want them to win because you know all the guys on the team, but are you also like, this is going to be weird if they win the Super Bowl?
No, I was actually okay with it that time because I made the choice to move. The year the Cardinals cut me, I think it was 15. I think they actually went to the NFC Championship game and lost to Green Bay maybe. That might have been the year. Carolina.
Yeah.
That year I was kind of conflicted. I knew all the guys wanted to do well, but I'm like, man, y'all cut me. I don't want y'all to win it. You know,
you can go far. You don't need rings though. Yeah,
I was like, yeah, you don't need any, right? Because I felt like I could have been there helping too. So
yeah.
and I was still playing. Right when I made the decision, I wasn't playing. I mean, it didn't matter who won it because I took myself out of the opportunity.
Yeah, see, this is where you and I are different. If I was still playing, I'd be like, great, I can still do something about it. Whereas, like, if I made the decision, I'd be like, why did I do that? If they're running around out there with the Lombardi trophy. But that's probably the healthier way to approach it is the way you're doing it.
We have a lot of people that always bring this up, a lot of listeners and stuff. As a former player, you might know this. The idea of Larry potentially moving the tight end, is that completely ridiculous?
I mean, it's all about he's not going to ever put his hand in the ground, but you could put him in a position to where he's matched up on a linebacker. You know, there's different ways schematically where you line them up at number three or you motion them across and they have to bump depending on the defense that you're looking at and create a matchup that's advantageous to him. But for him to ever put his hand and be an inline traditional tight end is not going to happen.
Could you do it, I guess, in a way where, like, not that he's a tight end, but within Kingsbury's offense, you almost use him as a tight end when you're going to pass, but then have Max Williams or whoever out there to block, or is that giving away too much to the defense?
Well, it's the same thing. It's just about – it's alignments. I mean, the personnel is the personnel.
Okay.
So maybe, you know, I guess and it depends on how the defense is going to classify Larry too, because you can line him up at tight end, but they still see him as a receiver and bring in a corner, knowing or let's say a more athletic safety – that's still strong and can play in the box and say, I'll take my safety on Larry and match up. Where if it's a traditional tight end, the matchups you guys are trying to get is having that linebacker in there, and he's not in there. We had a call in Buffalo. It was actually called Buffalo, was our package. And that's when I would go out of the game and we'd bring a strong safety and we still play our base. But now we had a guy that was able to cover but also play the run game if you decide you wanted to run out of that set. And so – You play that mismatch, right? So that's the cat and mouse game that coaches play, trying to figure out how you're going to identify the players that I have on the field, how you're going to match up, and then as an offensive coordinator, how am I going to try to take advantage of those matchups? And so it really depends on the defense and how they see you and their personnel, whether or not they would treat Larry as a true tight end or actually bring in a safety that has a better ability to cover him.
I'm going to feel bad if Fitz retires and the Cardinals go on a run for Fitz. I'm not even involved.
Oh, yeah, you feel real bad, you know, in that sense. Kind of like, you know, I keep going back because that was my last team, but like Kyle Williams never went to the playoffs in his whole time, and he was thinking about retiring the year that we actually went to go. So I would have been sick for him to miss out on that after, you know, going through 12 years of not making it. And then it's his 13th year, he decided to retire, and we would have went to the playoffs.
Of course. Text us your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. When we come back, look, the Suns are contending for titles. The Cardinals are at least trying to be a playoff team. We've got two teams in town, though, that are in full rebuild mode. And with the Major League Baseball trade deadline tomorrow, we've already seen the D-backs start to make some moves. That's next. Luke Lipinski, Lorenzo Alexander, in for Bickley and Murata on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Murata.
All right, Major League Baseball trade deadline is tomorrow, so a day earlier than it typically is. Falls on a Friday.
Tomorrow. Yeah, 1 o'clock tomorrow. Usually it's July 31st, but they moved it up a day.
So it'll be right in the middle of the show tomorrow.
Very exciting.
Don't hide your excitement.
No, but it is amazing, though, like just this run. You know, the Suns had such an extended run in the playoffs that as soon as the season ends, you have like crazy Coyotes, you know, trades and draft and free agency right into the NBA draft, right into the MLB trade deadline, right into the NFL training camp. There's no like dead time at all in the summer, which there usually is.
Which is why the NBA season should start on Christmas every year, and we should have this every year.
I agree. I don't know why. I don't know why all the other sports are fine with baseball being alone in the summer for 2 months every year.
Just owning the market.
And then all the other sports compete for time in the fall and winter.
Well, every other body except football competes. Everybody else is scrounging.
Yeah, for a second.
Exactly. So why wouldn't you start your basketball season on Christmas Day or whatever, since they always make that a showcase anyway, and then just go from there like they were forced to do this year?
Yeah, it makes sense, but it's, you know, it always comes back down to the money and the networks and whether or not they want you to move, because you think about people that – and it's different too. So maybe they have to look at themselves as far as transitioning, because you can watch anything anywhere now with your tablets and phones and streaming, right? Where typically speaking that most people take vacations in the summer. I might not be at home to watch the games. And so TV revenue may be down. So, but since things are starting to diversify as far as how people consume content, maybe it does change.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. I think to me, the overriding thing would be, I just don't want to deal, even as the NBA, I don't want to compete with the NFL. And to Jarrett's point, like Major League Baseball, as much as I like baseball, has got that's the sport I'd rather compete with.
It's an easier pool if you're going to pull fans and viewers' eyes.
Especially if you're trying to get younger viewers.
Yeah, but again, you know, a lot of things are just, this is how we've done it, and unless somebody really makes me move, I just tend not to, instead of being progressive and thinking outside the box.
People just like to stick with what's comfortable and easy instead of doing the right thing.
But the pandemic gave my opportunity to do it, right? Because before, if you shift the season, that means that you would have to have a shortened off season.
Yeah.
So this technically is giving them a window to probably push it if they decide to.
And they didn't.
Instead, they're going to have two short off seasons in a row.
Yeah.
Right. So now, you're kind of, you're going to get stuck because nobody wants to get it pushed after in a normal year. Because then as a player, you cutting into my time.
Yeah.
Right. And the networks are going to say, well, you could play 50 games instead of 82 to make it work for this season. Then we move because that's money. So you almost kind of caught in it right now, unless they would have made the decision.
This was their chance to finally do it, and they didn't do it. So there you go. So somewhere baseball must just be loving it.
Yeah.
So the D-backs, of course, made the trade yesterday, Eduardo Escobar last night, to Milwaukee for outfielder Cooper Hummel and infielder Alberto Ciprian. Those guys, they may end up playing for the D-backs, but they're not like, it's not like they took the Brewers' first and second best prospects or something. Look, the D-backs don't really have anybody that's going to get some team's first or second best prospects right now, unless they trade Ketel Marte, which I guess is a possibility in the next 24 hours. I think Zach Gallen's like the one guy they wouldn't trade. Meanwhile, you have the Coyotes trading everybody, all the way down to their goalie yesterday, in a deal that was a good deal ultimately for the Coyotes, because if they were going to move Darcy Kuemper anyway, you at least get you get a first round pick, which is unheard of for a goalie, and you get one of Colorado's top prospects. But just in general, I know it's different in football as opposed to hockey, because you got 53 guys instead of 23 guys or whatever, but when you're one of the players that's still on the team and everybody else is getting traded off or leaving, that's got to be just a weird feeling. It's almost like a full reset.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it sends a message. I mean, as far as, you know, the new GM and new head coach, as far as establishing new culture, and you're going to have to fall in line or you may get traded too. And that's just part of the business. I mean, people come and go every single year, and you understand, especially when you don't perform well as a collective team, that there's an opportunity for you to be elsewhere. And I don't really follow hockey that. So can you tell me who is the person they're building around? Right. Cause when football does it, they tend to have like, okay, we got these two or three young players that we have, and now we're going to send all the veterans away and now bring in these other guys to kind of support them as they're moving forward.
Yeah. Yes, Luke, who is the guys that they're building around?
I would say they're building around Jacob Chychrun, and that's about it right now. Jacob Chychrun and the guy they just took in the first round of the draft on Friday night. I mean, but you don't know that Dylan Gunther, I would assume, isn't going to play this year. So I think with in basketball, it's kind of like, hey, you got the first pick and this guy's going to be great. You know, you go out and draft Anthony Davis, I guess didn't make the Pelicans great, but you know what it is. Like you get one guy and you only have 12 guys on your roster, 13 guys, a little bit different. Whereas hockey, I think with the Coyotes, they stockpiled picks. So they have 2 first-rounders next year and 5 second-rounders. Normally you wouldn't make all those picks. And I still think they'd probably try and combine some of those seconds, because second round in the NHL is not, you're not expecting an impact player like you would in the NFL.
Right.
But when you have that roster where you're just stripping it down, I mean, next year's draft is supposed to be one of the best in hockey. And if they picked 7 guys, I don't think they would mind 7 guys in the first 2 rounds. I don't think they'd mind, because if they hit on the 2 first-rounders and 2 of the 5 second-rounders, that's where they want their players to come from now.
So in hockey, the culture is you have time to do that? Because like in the NFL, right,
no.
your window is like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
That's, if you're bad in 2 or 3 years, you could be gone. Right?
Yeah.
So which team do you think is closer to rebuilding in the right way, the Diamondbacks or the Coyotes?
I think if the Coyotes stick with what they're doing, it's remarkable they were able to get as many picks as they got in the span of the last week. Like Bill Armstrong was told, get picks. Let's do this the right way. It's going to be painful at first, but get the picks and then hit on the picks. The reason I'm encouraged by the Coyotes is Bill Armstrong's strength is drafting, and they've got two scouts that are good at finding guys and developing. So if they do it right, I would say the Coyotes' ceiling is higher, but I would think the D-backs are probably closer.
But the Diamondbacks are, I mean, we'll see what happens in the next 24 hours, literally, because if they trade Ketel Marte, and now all of a sudden there's some grumbling that they could be trying to trade Madison Bumgarner.
Well, then my answer would be the Coyotes.
If they trade those two guys,
not Bumgarner, then, but Marte.
Because a rebuilding effort in baseball, if you're not, you know, willing to spend a ton of money on free agents, could also take several years.
Yeah.
And it's not like the Diamondbacks are a loaded team even if they make no moves tomorrow.
No, and they're
would you do anything just to try to unload? Would you trade Madison Bumgarner for essentially nothing?
Probably.
Or do you think he's worth holding on to the next few years?
Well, the problem that the Diamondbacks have that the Coyotes don't necessarily have is you're in a division with Dodgers and the Padres. Mm. And it's like the Coyotes are in a tough division.
Coyotes are not necessarily in the division with the Dodgers.
They are not. I don't know they would beat the Dodgers either. But at least in hockey, you know, you're one of eight playoff teams, whereas in baseball, it's a lot more limited. It's not even a knock on Madison Bumgarner, but I don't know what he's going to help them do the rest of this season or next season. Like I'd probably move him, wouldn't you? If you could get, what do you even like?
If they take his contract, I mean that is good enough. If you get like their 10th prospect, even is that good enough?
If I could get somebody's 10th prospect, probably yeah. Because I mean, so many, like the D-backs farm system is supposed to be really good, but those guys are all supposed to be 2 years away.
Right.
So it's like, what, you don't need a veteran pitcher for the next 2 years then.
The problem with the Diamondbacks and maybe not with the Coyotes, you tell me, maybe they're on their way to fixing this, but the Diamondbacks don't have that, you know, the Bryce Harper, the guy that's coming up, the Mike Trout, like the can't-miss superstar prospect that we're waiting for.
Yeah.
And then when he comes up, okay, all, you know, here we go. They have a lot of, like, decent guys, but they don't have that superstar, and they've really never had that. I mean, they've had number one picks. I guess Justin Upton was a very big prospect, but
yeah.
The Dansby Swanson year, that was never supposed to be that big. Archie Bradley was a name, Trevor Bauer.
I remember Max Scherzer was supposed to be a big deal.
Oh, yeah,
he never
was
wound
a big
up,
deal.
He never wound up to be anything.
Real
so.
Big deal.
Oh, and look, he did, just not here. I mean, I think it's tough because you're comparing two different sports just in the way you want to build a team, but I think the Coyotes' plan is to just get a bunch of, like, unless you can get Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews, just get a bunch of good players. And you can do that in baseball, but you do need to kind of have, like, a true number one pitcher and, a good number two. You got to have a couple stars, whereas in hockey, you can't just all have, like, a bunch of no-name players. But there are teams like Vegas and especially the Islanders that keep going deep every year that never really had a top. Vegas has never had even, like, a top five pick in the draft, and they're there every year. So I would assume that's the way the Coyotes are trying to do this, is they're just trying to stockpile picks, and then you got to hit on the picks. And it could be painful right now. It's weird. It's weird trading away your number one goalie for a draft pick.
It's weird that while the Suns and Cardinals are almost on an unprecedented parallel success story over the last couple of years and looking like in the future,
yeah,
the other two franchises in town are both totally rebuilding, that looks like.
I tell you what, how many times did we do that poll on ArizonaSports.com where it was like, which team is going to be, who's going to win the championship first?
And who's going to make the playoffs next?
Well, yeah.
For years
yes.
We did.
But for who's going to win the championship first, it was always like, there was a good stretch where the Coyotes looked like they were winning the poll most of the mm-hmm. time. And now, obviously, you would pick the Suns because they were two wins away. But, you know, like those last two wins are not easy to get. Like if they don't get it soon, another team's going to come up here and probably would be the Cardinals, I would think.
As far as winning the championship, I still think the Suns are closer.
Well, yeah, they are closer. But I'm saying right. Like if they don't get there the next two, like if they don't actually
do it in the next couple of years, then you could say, and a lot of that hinges on Kyler's growth.
Yeah.
As far as where they go and how deep they can go. So if he takes a big jump in, what is this, year three for him now?
Yeah.
And that's where you want to see. Josh Allen had that big jump in year three. So if he has that, yeah, that puts him on pace to do it if the Suns don't do it first.
Yeah. All right, good stuff. We'll come back. Sarah Cazell is here, and she's going to bring us social studies next. It is the Bickley and Murata Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.